Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Wednesday, June 23rd, and this is a special program because, number one, we're going to be speaking to Joan Gronowski. She's a former Yonkers City Council member representing District 3 and served one term at her choice because that was what she promised the public. And can you imagine a politician that actually stood by her own word? Whoa, was that ever a wake-up call? And, well, she's on. So good morning, Ms. Gronowski. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you?
Well, I'm thrilled. There was so many exciting things that happened yesterday in the elections. It's kind of you to make the time to reflect on what transpired. When you look at Yonkers, what impressed you by that? What was the biggest contest? I guess that was the one for city council president. I was really quite surprised how poorly the incumbent did. And
yes,
the challenger, Lakeisha, did phenomenally well. So Lakeisha,
yeah.
Collins-Bellamy.
Yeah, absolutely. The spread is 57% to 29% at this point. And Pete Spano did pretty well. I mean, I didn't know of him before this race, but I thought it would be close, but not like this. I'm very surprised. I'm actually kind of shocked, and I don't know how many factors played a part in it. There were so many things going on. You can introduce that. A lot of them were unearthed on your side and charges by other people. So I don't know if it was a combination of things, if it was one more than the other, but I never expected this.
Yeah, I got the impression, I think I shared my thoughts with you yesterday, and that I thought it would be close, but I thought that the Cater team was losing out at the end, the last 2, 3, 4 days. But I never expected that it would be such a poor showing by him. And so I don't know what precipitated that. Maybe it was an interview he had with Lou Ross a few days ago. I'm just not quite sure. But he seems, you know, I think what I don't know what will happen to him is, what does he do now that he knows he's term limited out by the election? And what does he do for the balance of the year?
Well, there's
like
still
a lame duck.
Well, you know, there's still the investigation that's kind of looming over his head with respect to the rent being paid to the offices where his legal
mm-hmm.
business is housed. That's not over yet. I mean, of course, as
no.
you know, that was challenged. At some point, he retained counsel and he didn't supply any of the records that were asked of him. So on another note, I don't, had it been me, I don't know whether I would have handled it in that way, especially since all these charges came out in May. You knew you had a primary coming the next month. I would have handled
yeah.
it differently, but that's just me. I would have done it differently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, when you don't ask, when you don't, you know, I mean, I know his lawyers took the position that the investigation called for by his colleagues on the council was not done according to form, and if he had complied, it would have been complying with an illegal investigation, but I would have done it anyway. I mean, if you weren't asked to explain a vote on something, which might have been a little bit more of a troublesome area where you'd have to go back and validate how you acted on certain things. I mean, did you pay the rent or did you not? I don't know. Here's my canceled checks. Here's the rental agreement. But again, that's just me. But I think when you don't do that, people get the inference that there's something that's not right, you know, right or wrong. I mean, they're going to get that impression.
Well, one thing is certain. People may not realize it, but when when you engage a lawyer, which he did, and, you know, they give you advice, and he's a lawyer himself, so he's not unaware of the fact that he could tell them what he wants done. So the demeanor and the attitude of a legal counsel is based on the client, what the client wants.
Yes, sure.
But at the same time, you get best practice from your lawyer. Otherwise, why would you have that lawyer? So you're looking for them for advice and guidance at a time that could be very stressful. On the Rue Ross interview, when they asked him, well, when Mr. Ben Ross asked him, well, why aren't you just going to show us the canceled checks or whatever payment? He said no one ever asked him, so he never decided to do that. And I think that was a failure on his part. He should have been forthcoming and shown us the checks.
Well,
and that
they
would
asked
have
him now.
Thrown it
I
out
mean,
the water.
He was eventually asked. I mean, I don't even know if you needed a whole complement of city council people to ask the IG to make this investigation. I asked as a private citizen of Mr. McLaughlin's predecessor, Brendan McGrath, mm-hmm. to investigate certain things when he held that position. And I think a private citizen could do that unless they changed the methodology of contacting the IG. But anyone could have asked that question. But again, for me, I wouldn't have seen the need to hire a lawyer for that type of inquiry. I mean, it wasn't a complicated, again, to my mind, it's not a complicated request. It's not something where you have to go back and research your actions as a sitting council member and how you acted, how you came to a vote or anything like that. It's, did you pay the rent or didn't you? But was that enough alone to make this total so much of a widespread for Ms. Collins Bellamy? I don't know. Maybe there were other factors. There was, you know, talks about infighting and issues going on internally in his office. But look, when you have all of your colleagues on the council going against you, I mean, maybe to the voter it looks like, you know, well, what is he going to accomplish going forth if six of his colleagues are going against him? So maybe that had a factor too. What could he do?
Yeah, exactly. It becomes really a lame duck. I've never really realized the name lame duck. It really means he's not going to be able to function well for the next years. And the investigation will probably still continue to find out what the facts are.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's a blunder on his part, but we'll see. And we'll just have to give it time for it to unfold and go from there. You know, I wonder why the city council didn't use its own subpoena power to request all the information that they wanted. Or is that not a capacity that they had?
As far as I know, they had subpoena power. And you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they wouldn't have done it on their own. Perhaps they wanted to make it, I don't know, less of a feeling that it was
confrontational.
Confrontational, to go through the IG, who has the responsibility of conducting most investigations, if not all. Maybe they thought it was less partial having him do the investigation than having it come from their own group, even though they all signed off on it. So that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. I think you're right. Well, I don't think there's anything more to say about that particular contest. Do you?
No. It speaks for itself. I mean, it's I'm shocked by the point spread, but I mean, there were other factors involved. That who knows? As it will all come out.
What
at
about
some
the
point.
The Spano campaign? I didn't expect him to do so well. I think he's a sports figure. I think he's a school teacher. I don't really know much about him at all. But he seemed to be like a guy that one could gravitate to if one didn't like Mike Cater and maybe was unfamiliar with Lakeisha Collins-Bellamy. So that was a very interesting move because he got, what, 16% of the vote. That's pretty big.
Yeah, I think 14 as of last count. But you're right. And then, you know, I don't know much about him.
Neither do I.
Some clips. He seems like an affable guy. And who knows, maybe people, I know there's no relation, but maybe people saw this mannel name and thought it was he was a relative of the mayor, and maybe that helped him to some, you know, to some degree. But, yeah, it was interesting that he did so well coming out of nowhere.
Absolutely. What about the race for county clerk that involved Shanae Williams, who is the representative in the first council district in Yonkers?
Mm-hmm.
She was a little bit ahead yesterday, but then this morning's tally seems to show that she's short by about. Well, it looks like about 300 votes.
Yeah,
so
very little.
She only got 49. Mm-hmm. And Tim Idoni, the incumbent, he came out with 51%. I didn't realize that would be so close either.
I had no idea. I'm surprised at that more than anything, I guess. She's got a young girl in her first year is on the city council and making that leap to a county seat. I'm really shocked at the numbers being so close. I wasn't really paying too much attention to that campaign. I didn't really think there would be this much of a difference in the numbers, so I really didn't focus on it too well. I didn't know what her issues were, other than vaguely, you know, having more updating of the clerk's processes, but I really didn't pay too much attention to it. But again, I'm very shocked by the results.
Yeah, I didn't expect much. I didn't hear very much from her side. Maybe that was my own failing. I just didn't hear very much about what she could do as county clerk that hasn't already been done. I think it's been very much modernized, and I thought it was very effective. I don't know where her votes came from, but I guess she must have gotten a tremendous amount of support from Yonkers, and
I can't
imagine why it would be so strong.
Well, we don't know. I mean, I don't know when we'll know what the turnout was. I'm sure it was abysmally low, as it usually is, and even in election year, this is the primary. So I think the voter turnout, of course, since COVID changed everything, but changing the primary date from September to June, I think, made a lot of changes in who came out to vote. I think people are still maybe programmed to come out in September. I don't know, but I'd like to see what the turnout was and where the votes came, and we won't see that for another few months from the county. But, I'm not a Democrat anymore. I changed my registration to Republican, so I didn't get anyone's mailers. Per se, I did get an awful lot, though. My neighbor is a Democrat, and she left a lot of her political mailings in the hallway, and there was an awful lot coming from in the city council president's race. So that I happen to notice at certain intervals, but I really don't know what Ms. Williams' issues were in that particular race. So, but I'm
I don't either.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it would be much closer than
you,
it.
Well, what about the county legislator, District 17, where Jose Alvarado is the incumbent, and then London Reyes was running against him, and then Virginia Perez. I thought Virginia Perez was one that scared Jose Alvarado the most. London Reyes didn't have such a strong following. But commendable, I guess, 15%.
Yeah.
And Virginia Perez, you know, she was very quiet behind the scenes. And Jose did very, very well. He got 48% of the vote. I thought that was very huge for him.
Well, he is an incumbent, and so I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's to be expected to some degree. Virginia, I didn't realize until much later into the campaign that she was, you know, making a challenge. So I don't know how actively she was campaigning, but she did very well, 36% of the vote. I mean, given the fact that Mr. Reyes was in the race, I don't know who he took votes from, whether it was Jose or from Virginia, but if he's not in the race, of course, it might have been totally different. But yeah, I think Virginia did very well. She's a fighter, you know, even though she might not, again, I can't say when she entered the race, but she's got a lot of energy, Virginia. She's, you know, I like Virginia. So I'm sure she'll be back in some fashion before too long.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she's a fighter, and she knows how to play, you know, in the political world. That's not bad. It's just that she knows how to conduct herself. So she's really been quite astute at that. You know what else, if you don't mind, I'd love to go over and cover Greenberg. There was Paul Finer, he's been an incumbent there, close to 20 years, maybe even a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran against Atasha D. Young. I didn't learn very much about her until the last 2 weeks when I started to notice her. They started sending me some stuff. But Paul Finer, I thought, has always been innovative, very compassionate, a little bit of a quirky sort of guy, which I got very comfortable with because he's so engaged and so involved, and he seems to think so hard about issues. And his form of governance, I think, is stupendous. I don't know what you think about him. And he won, evidently, with a comfortable 60% to her 40%.
It looks like it, yes, for the latest totals being posted, yes. Well, I admire Paul Finer. I think of all the people in office in this area, I think that most highly of Paul. When I was on the city council in Yonkers, he had already brought up the issue of eliminating or downsizing county government, and I, you know, joined him in that effort, and kind of was the precursor, again, of the Tea Party effort that came on afterwards. He's not a tax and spend person. He was very actively trying to change the way county government was because of the mandates that were funded. And I haven't met anyone that is in his district that doesn't admire him and like him. I think he drives around with his little little car with his number on it, his cell phone number, if I'm not mistaken, from those years. He has his own cell phone number on. Anyone's welcome to call him at any time, and he will talk to them. And I just, you know, where do you find that? You know, sometimes now you can't even get staff to respond to an issue locally. So, I mean, but he answers his phone, and he's always there. And I'm so glad that he seems to have prevailed in this race, and I just think very highly of him.
Yeah, I would concur. I know he's sort of a very lovable type of character, you know, and then I remember seeing images, not actually being on the scene, but I think he drives around in a station wagon, and It looks like he's got a sign that you would normally find on a pizza delivery type of vehicle, and it has his phone number on top. It's just amazing. But how many people do you know are that responsive to the public call? And so his numbers, and he's out every day. I don't know how he does it. He's there at the supermarkets on Sundays, and He does it all. It's just amazing, amazing to me.
He's got a lot of energy, you're right. And he's innovative. He's not stagnant. I mean, he's been there for a number of years, but he just doesn't sit back and take anything for granted. So, yeah, I'm glad that he seems to have had this victory.
Yeah.
I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I found him very innovative when it came to the COVID crisis. He replicated something that he had done years before when he had I forgot the term now, but I think they call them, there were people who would help, young people would help take the snow out of the parking lots or
I think you said
or
snow
the driveways.
Angels. Was it not snow angels?
Yeah, the snow angels. That's
yeah.
what it was. It was the snow angels, and that was a phenomenal program. And I was always hoping it would be replicated in Yonkers. I don't think it ever was. And then he was able to ratchet it up even more when we had the COVID-19 crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make appointments to get an examination or the inoculation, rather. And but older people didn't have the dexterity with their hands, or they didn't have the computer systems, and they didn't know what to do. They couldn't read and understand the instructions. And he had the COVID-19 angels, and it went national, the story of what he did. And it went all over the nation. It was amazing how far a reach he has. And
yeah,
that's because he thinks
of that.
Out
amazing.
Of the box.
Yeah, I wasn't aware
yeah.
of that. Yes, that wonderful. See, there's an example
of
Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, that's him to the nth degree. I think he was the first one to demand that in order to be safe when you would walk into a supermarket, they would take your temperature. And they do that everywhere,
mm-hmm.
even
that
to
right?
this day.
Yeah.
Go to the bank, they test your temperature.
Yeah.
Wherever, it's amazing. So very, very fascinating. What a brilliant outcome for him.
Yeah.
And then, it's interesting. I didn't expect this so much, but on the Westchester County, we've got other people that ran for office. Chris Johnson, he's the majority leader
mm-hmm.
of the Westchester County Board of Legislators. So he handily won that. I guess that was to be expected.
Yeah.
And he ran against Juanita Crosby. Do you know her? I hardly
yeah,
know.
Yeah, Juanita was one of the legislative aides, I believe, in former City Council President Chuck Lesnik's office. But I don't think she did badly.
Yes, that's...
Again, when you look at percentage, 38%, 62 for Chris.
Yeah.
That seems like a big spread, but, you know, how many people voted? She got 919 votes, and he got 1,497 votes. I don't think she did too badly. She's a newcomer.
Well.
She's a young girl, and, she's accomplished a lot in her young life, but I think she did very well. I don't think anyone here, getting into the Rubel race in Yonkers, I mean, I think Mr. Burgos did pretty well, I mean, considering...
it's phenomenal.
What was the spread now? Okay, 55%
to 45%. I think it's a 10% spread.
Yeah, yeah. For
Rubel
got 491 votes and Burgos got 400 votes. I think he did very well.
Well, I think based on Burgos's, the tally of votes, 45% is really terrific for a first-timer.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't know him at all, and young guy, but I think it really puts a kibosh on John Rubel's future if he was so easily, challenged. 45 to 55, that's a big accomplishment
yeah.
by Burgos.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's not my district, obviously, and I'm not a Democrat, but I don't know how much Mr. Burgos hammered home the fact that Mr. Rubel changed parties not that long ago.
He
was a Republican and changed to Democrat. I did the reverse switch. I was a Democrat and changed to Republican. But I, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, everyone always seems to have a philosophical change of heart when it's the majority of voters are of a certain party. It, you know, does anyone even mm-hmm. have a philosophy anymore? But I don't know. Maybe Mr. Burgos carried that point home in this election. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a Republican challenger in November. Any other challenger. I don't know if Burgos has another line, which would make it interesting. But, I think he did very well. He did very well.
Well, with Mr. Burgos, he told me, if I remember correctly, that he was endorsed by the Working Families Party. However, I don't think his name was on the ballot as a Working Families Party candidate. I think that losing this particular challenge against Rubio, this would be the end of the line for him, unless I've got it wrong. I didn't have the time this morning to give him a call to reconfirm if I understood him correctly.
He would only be on the ballot.
But he's got a future.
Yeah, but wouldn't he? I'm losing memory of certain things. But he would only have been on the ballot if he was primaried, for the Working Families Party line.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if he's not primaried, I don't think there's a problem. But we can look into that afterwards and see what happens. And then you've got, of course, you've got the 6th council district. Stella did pretty well in the race against Tim Hodges.
I was surprised.
Stella Xu Chow, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think the challengers did pretty well overall,
Absolutely.
Putting
Absolutely.
The city council race aside, the city council president, which was a very wide margin. But I think they all did very well. You've got Corazon's race. She had 3 challengers. She did very well, which surprised me because, again, I don't know what her challenges issues were, but I would have been, one of them should have been the fact that she voted against overturning term limits, and she then ran for a third term herself. So that to me is an important issue.
Do you think that we're going to, I've been noticing that people are suggesting that we should even have a 4th term for the mayor. Do you think that there's an appetite for a 4th term for the mayor after we used to have only a 2-term limit?
You think it's possible that they'll look to have a 4th term? Yeah, if that's a question.
That's what I've been hearing.
I don't know how well it will be received, but, I mean, people didn't seem to be too shaken up by the extension to the 3rd term. To me, it's, you know, you're corrupting what the voters had decided 2 times before to limit it to 2 terms. To me, I left office after the 1 term, as you mentioned when you introduced me. I think 4 years is plenty of time for someone to affect change if you're going to be able to do it. To make the case that for continuity, you need to keep, you know, running again. I mean, really? Why? The president of the United States has 2 terms. How come a president can get it done in 4 or 8 years, whatever, but they have an 8-year maximum? Why does someone in government need 12 years? Most of it's about the pension, so you can get a government pension. You know, if you're there 10 years, you need the pension after 10 years unless they've changed that. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons underlying the term extensions, but again, if they do it again, it's still corrupting what the voters have decided twice.
Yeah, that's what it is. Well, with so many of our people, when they move up to the point of being a mayor in the city of Yonkers, many of them were in different positions employed by the city, so their pension would have been there anyway. Because in total, they were over 10 years.
But not for a lot of them. I mean, some of them, I mean, you're going back through the years, some of them wouldn't have a pension were it not for their service in government, you know, because a lot of them were lawyers, you know. I don't think they're in a pension plan per se, and in the legal profession, they have to pay for their own health insurance. These council people are getting free health insurance unless that's changed for them and their families. So that's that benefit alone is a small fortune. So yeah, but again, to me, the bottom line is the voters voted twice to keep it at two terms. And if two terms is enough for the president, it should be enough for anybody in local government.
Well, that's a great way to end our segment. Unfortunately, it could go on forever. But thank you so much for making the time, Joan Gornowski. What a
thank
pleasure.
Thank you, Hezzy. Thank you.
Respect the fact that you said you'll do it in 4 years, and you did. And that's unheard of.
Yeah, I know. I don't see much of it going on now, but thank you. Thank you for having me on as your guest.
Thank you. All the best.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye.
Bye. There we have it. That's Joan Gornowski. She represented the 3rd District and the Yonkers City Council, and that's where it went with her. I'm going to look up the number for Sean Patterson Howard, because she's supposed to call us at this time. I didn't see her on the line, so I've got myself prepared. Bear with me a moment, and hopefully got it all in place here. 1 second. All right, bear with me a moment. Ah, there she is. She's already on the line.
Hi, Hezzy. How are you? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Mayor. What a pleasure to speak to you today. And this is a very audacious day for you because, you know, when I looked at the results in Mount Vernon, it seems like Sean Patterson Howard was there behind every win. That's amazing. You know, it's taken years for them to figure that out, that you're in the right. You moved the city forward in the right way. It's amazing. Did you expect this?
Well, Hezzy, you know, it. First of all, I want to say congratulations to our Democratic primary winner for Comptroller, Dr. Darren Morton, our Democratic primary winner, County Legislator Tyree Woodson Samuels, and our City Council. Yes? Hello?
Yep. Yes,
okay.
I hear you.
And for City Council, you know, right now, Caitlin Gleason, Ed Poteet, and Danielle Brown are in the lead, but it is a very razor-thin margin, and so we're cautiously optimistic. We are praying that, you know, through recounts and challenges and absentee ballots and anything, you know, that this election is fully certified, but that'll take a few weeks before we know everything that is final, you know, like I said, because of absentee ballots and the certification process. But we're cautiously optimistic. And I want to thank them for offering themselves up for service. I want to thank them for running hard races. You know, each of them are people of great character. They stayed above the political fray. They maintained emotional intelligence, especially the council candidates, under great attacks, robocalls, you know, flyers, text messages, constant bashing on social media. I said I never knew I was such a horrible person until I decided to run for public office, you know, and then you kind of just randomly become the focus of attacks to, if you see her, call the FBI on site. I mean, you know, the lengths that people will go to is pretty disheartening. But I guess, you know, people have told me over and over again, this is politics. You know, this happens for a while, and then we all become friends again. And, you know, I don't dislike anyone, but it's unfortunate that it takes things like this to reveal certain people's character. And so, you know, I want to congratulate them. I can't take responsibility for their wins. They knocked doors. They studied. They educated themselves on the issues. They walked the streets of Mount Vernon. I think several of them lost 10, 20 pounds because they were really out there canvassing and knocking doors and showing up at events and preparing for debates. And so I can't take credit for their victory. I did support them. I was quiet about my support. And, you know, in the end, there were people just coming to me saying, who do you support? Who are people who you believe that you can work with? And I said, I could work with anyone, but these are the people who have come and sat down and spoken with me. These are the people who said, you know, these are our ideas from Mount Vernon. What are your ideas? And let's see where they align. And they actually reached out, and they started doing the work. They reminded me of me when I was running. They started really doing the work, and you have to be able to support that.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. People got the impression that you were supportive of Darren Morton. And he did exceptionally well, 62% of the vote. And Marcus Griffith, he was a guy that people knew from a very long time. And the same thing with Derrickson Lawrence. But they had paltry showings as opposed to Mr. Morton. And I think that goes to show the prowess of your leadership in the last few years. You know, people didn't like you originally. I don't know why. I think they probably saw a fresh face and a new idea, and you were upsetting the apple cart the way it used to be. And
oh, definitely.
You created
definitely
a different way.
You know, not non-traditional.
Many people starting to see it your way.
Well, I didn't come up through the political ranks. I've been around politics since I was a child. I've worked on political campaigns since I was 14 years old. Very, very engaged, you know, probably from the ages of about 14 to 22. But those years is what made me decide to not want to run for office, because I saw people who I believed in when they were running to people who changed once they got in office. You know, once you had to constantly raise money to run, the priorities changed, the focus changed, went from being people who were in connection with the community sometimes to people who became tone deaf to the needs of the community. And I just, you know, being a young person, I said, well, wow, if that's the way this game is played, I could always, you know, if keeping my voice pure means staying out of elected office, then I'd rather just serve the community from that vantage point. And that's what I had been committed to, you know, most of my adult life until, you know, my community and you know, a divine intervention came into place. Mm-hmm. So it's I didn't come through the political ranks, and I know that was disconcerting to some, but others supported it. But I'm here, and I am learning and transforming the system. That's
absolutely.
Learn the system, but also to transform the system. You know, systems are important, but they have to be updated. If you look at your phone, it'll tell you your operating system needs an update. So we have to continuously update systems and make adjustments as times change, so that the work can be done and it can be done more efficiently.
Well, even though the tallies are very tight, especially for a council person in Mount Vernon, what's really interesting is there was the Mount Vernon Forward team. You had Danielle Brown. She seemed to gather the most number of votes. And then Caitlin Gleason at 1675, but a little bit better than her, Edward Potier, that was the team. And I got the impression that you were backing them up. But what I was surprised is that people like Janice Duarte and Lauren Carter and Andre Wallace and even Delia Ferguson, they're close, but they still are short 50 or more points behind the others. And I was surprised they did so poorly. I mean, it's close, you know, but it just seems that these are the incumbents. I would have expected more from them. So maybe they haven't done so well.
I can't speak to, and I won't speak to their performance. I will just say I'm really excited about the Mount Vernon Forward team and how they did. I really stood back and watched. You know, they were interviewed by some of my old team members who worked on my campaign. And, you know, they said, these are the people that we want to work with. And, you know, they went forward. I didn't come out early and endorse them because, you know, this race was their race. This race was their race. And they did the work. I came out, you know, later in the last few weeks and endorsed them because I just saw the work that they were doing. I saw that these were people, like I said, not taking anything away from anyone else, but these are people who were committed to putting in the work. There was no sense of entitlement. They weren't angry. There was no negative campaigning. They didn't speak about negative things about others. They just focused on what they wanted to do for Mount Vernon and that they wanted to be a part of a new day where there was decreased infighting. And I can tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I've had over the years and definitely over the past few weeks very spirited conversations with each of them. And when I say spirited, it's because they have their own mind. There were people who were saying, oh, well, if those are the people she's supporting, maybe we shouldn't vote for them because then there'll be rubber stamps and that will be bad. You know, other people said, we voted for you and we want to vote for people who you believe are going to be a good team for Mount Vernon. But the funny thing is everyone says that they want a government that works better and people who will work together to move Mount Vernon forward. And, you know, I believe that these five individuals are poised and ready to do just that. Again, not as a rubber stamp, but as people who are critical thinkers, people who are data-driven, people who do research, and people who will keep their ears to different segments of the community. When I tell you that all of them went from Fleetwood to Kingsbridge Road, you know, from the east side of Mount Vernon to the west side of Mount Vernon, speaking to seniors and children and people of all ethnicities and backgrounds and from different sectors of from business to faith to not-for-profit, you know, to neighborhood associations, they did the work. They did the work. They spoke to different departments and wanted to get an understanding of what the needs in the departments were. They spoke to residents, knocked on doors, and followed up themselves. They said, this is what we're hearing about the building department. You know, we need to understand so as we go out and speak to people, we can understand what's going on. Why are the elevators broke in this senior building? So they kind of started doing constituent services as they were knocking doors.
Well, that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. You are elected to be a public servant, and that's what they were doing as they were running their campaign. They were being responsive to the needs that they discovered as they knocked on doors, and they followed back through with people's concerns. And I think that is what you see in some of these numbers, for people to go from political obscurity to even being in contention for election just says a lot.
Absolutely. You know, there was one other issue that one other contest for county legislator, District 13, Tyre Woodson, Samuel, she did very well.
Very well.
That's a blowout at 57%. Don't know George Brown at all, and he came in third. And the one person that surprised me was Lisa Copeland. I didn't realize she wanted to become a county board legislator, but she did not do so well, even though she's a known entity in Mount Vernon. But, you know, whatever the case is, I guess people really like Tyre Woodson Samuels. And this is his first year, isn't it?
Yes. You know, Tyre has been a he was assistant director of constituent services for Congressman Elliot Engle for about 5 years.
Right, I remember him.
So I remember, you know, I remember Tyree from the Mount Vernon community. I remember him from when I was in the Y, and he would do things with the congressman. And, you know, he expressed when Lyndon Williams was appointed as judge his interest in being county legislator. The Democratic
yeah.
City Committee picked him back then. He went in November, and he just got to work. He became involved in the budgetary process. He was able to bring mm-hmm. back good resources for Mount Vernon and increase some of the offerings that some of our agencies were being given, from seniors to youth and cultural organizations, job training and things of that nature, brought money back for 4th Street Playground, $2 million, continues to work with us on Memorial Field. And in the midst of our fuel crisis and our sewer crisis and whatever other crisis, our ambulance crisis, as I speak to the county executive and deputy county executive, I also let our county legislator know what's going on, and he's been a partner in helping us to work with the county to secure some emergency resources that we've desperately
mm-hmm.
needed. And he's been very visible. He's been very visible. He showed up to every debate. Again, he knocked doors. He asked questions. He went to community events. He spoke to people. And I always tell people, you know, posters and pamphlets don't win campaigns. It's your contact
right.
with the people that makes a difference. And, you know, sometimes you have to make your case one by one, five by five, or 10 by 10, but you have to go out and touch the people. And he did that, and I think that is, you know, something that made a difference in this race.
Absolutely. Well, do you feel that, I know that everybody has to do the work, do you feel that you're somehow separated or distanced from all these candidates? Because I don't know if you're doing yourself justice to not recognize that you had a hand in showing people that there is a different way to govern, and that
mm-hmm.
people have now come to recognize that your way to govern works, and that there were a lot of other people that are looking to undermine or maintain whatever concept they thought would fly. Maybe it did 10 years ago, but it doesn't do it today. Because the city of Mount Vernon needs to move forward.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that's the challenge. But they feel that you can do that. And you need leadership. So without you at the helm, I don't think it would work as well.
Yeah, we definitely need leadership.
That. I'm not preaching.
No, yes, no, I understand it. We need leadership, but just as much as we need leadership, we need partnership and not
correct.
Dictatorship. So I want to provide leadership.
Exactly.
I think the difference between me and kind of maybe the old guard or the way people are used to things being done is there's a difference between leadership and dictatorship. I
mm-hmm.
told people I don't kiss a ring, nor do I have a ring to kiss. And I think that's very important. I think that's very important because people are used to kissing rings, and I don't. And,
yeah.
and sometimes that gets me in trouble, and sometimes it makes people say I'm arrogant or hard to deal with. I will work with you. I'm a partner. I really believe in partnership. I believe I'm a servant leader. I believe in partnership. When I have to lead, I will lead. But I'm not a dictator. I'm not a micromanager. And I'm cautious in, again, kind of elevating myself in this whole case, because that is one of the biggest things that people who oppose me or opposed these slate of candidates said. They're going to be a rubber stamp. They're going to be her puppets. These people can't think for themselves. And so in no way do I want to elevate myself and undermine the independence, the professionalism, the competency, the strength, the integrity, and the leadership and partnership capabilities that each of these candidates brings individually to the table, and that collectively we as a leadership group, even in different segments of the government, can bring together to serve the people of Mount Vernon. And so maybe that's why I'm not taking that same stance, because this mm-hmm. is what we've had to fight. They've had to fight that, and I've had to make that clear that in no way am I looking to lead people around or pull strings. I want people, you know, I'm a Christian, and I read my Bible, and it talks about iron sharpening mm-hmm. iron. And when you have people around you who can challenge you, who can challenge you to think differently, who are not yes people, sometimes it may take a little bit longer to get to a decision as you build consensus, but you come to a decision that is much better. When you're weaving a basket with multiple different types of colors and different weights of thread, you just weave a stronger basket than, you know, if you kind of just go through the motions of crossover, braid over, you know, it's going to be a weak basket. And so I want to see us create a strong basket and a strong culture of service for Mount Vernon, so that we could really serve Mount Vernon and that Mount Vernon can begin to take its place as the jewel of Westchester.
Well, you know,
we've been calling it that.
Right. It's a philosophical issue that you bring forward. When did we lose the concept that if one agrees with somebody that they're in their pocket or that they're kissing a ring? When can you reach a consensus and avoid that? That whole suggestion, well, you're just doing what you're told to do, or you're doing what you well, do we have to always be adversarial? Do we have to be contrarian? Can't we come to an agreement?
Well, I think
is that
what
we
saw.
Lost standard?
We've lost that. We lost that. You know, I can tell you when I saw it happen here in Mount Vernon. I saw it happen here in Mount Vernon when Clinton Young and Ernie Davis ran against each other back in 2007.
Yeah.
I think the
mm-hmm.
state of Mount Vernon politics changed dramatically that way. For me, it changed. As a young professional, it changed. As a Mount Vernonite, it changed. It changed so much, and it sickened me so that I ran off to Yonkers. That's when I ran to Yonkers. I left working in the city of Mount Vernon. I wasn't working for government, but I was working for an agency. But I knew that I did not want to be in an environment where the political tribalism was so suffocating, where if you went to lunch with someone that, you know, you were questioned and your loyalty was questioned and people assumed that you were in someone's pocket, in someone's tribe.
Yeah.
We lost individuality somewhere along the way here in Mount Vernon. And I think in the county and in the country, when, you know, just by going to lunch with someone, having a friendship with someone, in our families, we have to be able to come to Thanksgiving dinner. Sometimes people are Republicans, others are Democrats, and you could be moderate. You could all be Democrats, but one is a liberal, one is a moderate, one is a progressive, one is a conservative, and you can still have differences. But for some reason, having differences, having different likes, like you said, became a problem. People were seen as contrary. And again, I believe the diversity of thought, not just ethnic and socioeconomic and gender diversity is important or religious diversity, but diversity of thought. When you have different people who think different ways, who can see things at a different vantage point, who can come to the same table and look at a challenge from a different angle and come up with the best solution, that's important. If you have people who are homogenous and all think alike and all feel the same and all approach issues the same way, then they're not going to come up with new and innovative solutions to deal with challenges that have been longstanding as well as challenges mm-hmm. that are emerging. And that is why I wanted people who think differently than me. That is why I wanted people who wouldn't be a rubber stamp. But again, not people who would be contrary, not people who would be more focused on undercutting the person in position so that they could gain position and power when the community, you know, at the expense of the community. And that is what I think we saw when Clinton won. Those who were loyal to Ernie and the council said, well, we're going to block him. And then Ernie got back in, and he got support, mm-hmm. and that lasted for a little while. And then there were people who ran to block Ernie. And then, you know, Richard got in, and, you know, then there were people to block Richard. And then I got in, and, you know, mm-hmm. I think my relationship with the council started pretty well, you know, even though we all didn't get along and have personal relationships and didn't always agree. Mm-hmm. You know, 3 votes were generally okay to get. But I think things definitely changed as political season came around, as more stress happened. And look, I'm just grateful for the outcome of the election so far. I don't dislike anyone. I just believe that there are people who I can work with better. You know, when you have an opportunity to pick your team, you know, you try to, and it was said that some people said that it was unethical for me to endorse a candidate. I see presidential candidates and governors, they travel all around their state and around the country endorsing people who are going to be in the legislative body and working with them. So for me to endorse people for a legislative body, I don't see as being wrong. People do it. They just do it behind the scenes. They do it in a way mm-hmm. that's private, but if people know them and they know their hand, then they know it. But people have asked for transparency, so people asked, and I told them. And so I'm not going to be faulted for that, and I'm not going to also use that as taking any credit away from these candidates who worked extremely hard to be in the position that they woke up and found themselves in today.
No, I realize that. I don't think you're taking credit for their win, because that's their win. They had to work the streets and talk to people and reach out and do whatever they needed to do in order to become pertinent. And you could see that also by how close some of those numbers are. So people worked very hard, and they were able to – they evidently connected with people that supported them. I guess what I found always difficult is that people are so adversarial, so contrarian, that they don't hear. So there is no discourse. And I don't know what's so difficult, because if you have a sense of discourse and interest and respect of others, then you listen to them and you never know. You might learn a new trick, a new game plan. You might learn a new way of doing something that you didn't know existed before. It may be easier, it may be more difficult, but the results are positive. And I don't know why we lost our way. I must be an old man, you know, to reflect that used to be to some extent, and I'm looking for it to come back. So who knows? But it really very difficult time. Oh, so anyway, good luck to all the people in Mount Vernon who are going to end up coming victorious, and let's hope that all works to everybody's benefit and that nobody feels offended or disjointed, you know, by, you know, not being in the loop, so to speak, and that they'll still work together, you know, because there isn't always another election.
There's always another election, you know, there's another city council election in 23, mm-hmm. there's another, you know, I'm up for re-election in 23, and, you know, so political cycles come, political cycles go, but governance stays here always, and Mount Vernon has a lot of challenges but a lot of opportunities, and that is what I want to focus on, working on changing our challenges, finding solutions for our challenges, and taking advantage of the opportunities that await us.
Well,
and if we do that well, then 23 won't be hard.
Now, let's hope not. Well, I want to wish you the best in Mount Vernon and to you and to all those people that are going to eventually come to win, and we'll be able to get those results hopefully in 24 hours or less, and that would be nice. So
thank you so much.
And thank you for making the time.
God
bless. What a pleasure.
Be well. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, let's call our next guest. Bear with me a moment. But we're going to get to her in a moment. Okay, I'm not quite sure what that is. Okay, so we're going to have to wait a moment. And let me just see if I can get this down again. Oh, there it is. We're going to get a call in a second. Bear with me. Good morning. Is this Ms. Madden?
It certainly is. How are you?
What a pleasure to speak to you. I'm so excited that you made the time for our audience. What a pleasure. And I don't know if people realize that you're the original person that got an award, and you started, I don't know how many years ago, and you've been with Cherish the Ladies, which is a celebration of Irish music, and it's been going on ever and ever. And you recently got recognized for that effort. And yet you have Irish descent, but you're born in the Bronx, aren't you? And you live in Yonkers.
Yes, I'm born in Woodlawn. I was raised in Woodlawn until I was about 13.
Yeah.
On 236th Street off of Katona Avenue, and
right.
I went to St. Barnabas, and then my family moved up to Yorktown Heights, where my parents moved up there and brought my six brothers and sisters and myself up there, and I've been living back down in Yonkers here now. Oh my God, I guess probably the guts of 23 years I've been in Yonkers now, and I bought my house here off of Kimball Avenue. I'm back in the Woodlawn area, and my house backs up to the reservoir. The Yonkers Reservoir, so Hillview Reservoir, and my mother and father emigrated from Ireland. My father was a very famous accordion player. He had a show band and played all the weddings and dances, and he was an All Ireland champion accordion player. So my parents was very important to pass on the heritage, and my father was dying for one of his children to play music, and he got me. And never knowing that I would be that I would get hooked on Irish traditional music, being a girl here from the Bronx and Yonkers border here. But I was very fortunate. In 1983, I went over to Ireland and I won the world championship in flute and penny whistle, which is the sound that makes the song from the Titanic.
Yes.
That's that instrument, the penny whistle, and I became a world champion and wound up a professor of ethnomusicology. Dr. McMaloney called me up and asked me would I help him organize a series of concerts featuring women musicians, because throughout history in Irish music, the music had been very much dominated by the men, and now all of a sudden there was this huge surge in young women playing Irish traditional music, and he asked me to help him organize a series of concerts celebrating the women coming this, changing the role, now playing the music and becoming the champions. And I asked him, what are you going to call the series? Cherish the Ladies. He said, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's the name of an Irish jig, and it wound up that I started with the band from the inception, and 36 years later, I'm still here, and now, we've wound up touring the world, and oh my God, we've played over 4,000 concerts, recorded 18 albums with the band, and I guess I've recorded 24 CDs myself, and now we're one of the top Celtic music groups in the world. So I was very honored to receive the National Endowment for the Arts, their National Heritage Award Fellowship, which is a grant they give to nine people each year from all walks of life, and it's it's incredible honor. It's the highest honor that the government gives to performing artists. So in the folk and traditional world, and you're considered a national treasure to the country. So boy,
yes,
am I thrilled.
That is really fantastic. What is it about, I guess, the Irish culture that seems to infuse everyone, whether they're born here or born elsewhere, but there's a cement that brings people together with the music and the culture and even the language. And there's so much accomplishment and innovation from Ireland that has been sparked wherever the Irish have gone in their journeys around the world. And what makes it so exciting? And it somehow it resonates even with people who are not of Irish culture or Irish backgrounds.
Well, Abby, it's funny you say that, because it's very true. I'm at our concerts, you know, and you know, we sell out all over the world, and we you know, from China to Japan, you know, we've had thousands of people come to our shows every night, and it really is a phenomenon. But, you know, Ireland's a small little country. I mean, they've got about 4.5 million people there. But in America, you know, close to 40, 50 million people have Irish roots. So they've gotten around, you know, America, this big melting pot, this beautiful country that, you know, where we all come together from all walks of life and all nationalities. And people appreciate all the music and the ethnic groups. But I think with Irish music, you know, in the 1800s, when so many of the Irish came over working on the railroads, and, you know, they got off, you know, working on the railroads and got off in Appalachia, and then they started playing their fiddles and doing their dancing.
Yes.
And it became country music and hillbilly music and old-timey music, and, you know, and it became the godfather of all those American folks traditions. So I think people can appreciate the music because, you know, it's familiar to them. But I do think the outstanding part is the level of virtuosity in the arts. It's a small little country. As I said, you can fit three Irelands into the state of New York. So when you think of how small it is and where it has gone, I think the advent of river dance and Michael Flatley's, you know, Lord of the Dance, you know, with all the people getting involved with Irish dancing. And, I mean, in my wildest dreams, when I started making an album, I recorded on a number of over 200 albums. I played in numerous commercials and television and movies, and never in my wildest dreams, like when I recorded a solo whistle album, you know, featuring just the pretty tunes of Ireland, the old, you know, simple melodies. You know, I've sold over 500,000 CDs. You know, people, it touches people, the music. You know, I think that, you know, it's very haunting, beautiful music, but yet it also could be lively, you know, when you get to the jigs and when you bring in the Irish dancing and the songs. You know, there's something that I know when people from all walks of life and all ethnic backgrounds, they come to our shows, I know it's not the last time they're going to come. They get hooked, and that is something that just blows my mind when I'm in the lobby of, you know, maybe the Tarrytown Music Hall, which we sell out every year for Christmas, you know, and you were there, and there's every national, it's like the UN in the lobby, meeting people from all over, and we've done that now the last 10 years. Now we do two shows, we sell out two shows every year for our Christmas tour there, and it's just wonderful and incredible to me and beautiful to see that people would enjoy music that comes from my background, but it touches them somehow.
It does touch. Just like literature touches the mind, you know, with so many Irish writers and musicians, and you mentioned Flatley as well. These are just exceptional people, and they've risen to the top of of consciousness. And I would never imagine, until I heard Irish music, that it would be so scintillating, so interesting, so engaging, and it's unique. And it's really a wonder that it's been able to accomplish so much and reach out to so many different people. Even in politics, Ireland is very, very powerful. People have learned from Ireland in the last 100, 150 years easily, you know, that people may actually be able to reflect upon. And so where do you go from here?
Do you evolve the
programs further?
Well, for me, you know, I mean, my parents nearly had a heart attack when I said I wanted to play music and be a musician. And my parents, oh, my God, you know, my brothers are all physics and engineers. And, they've all gone on to do great jobs. And here I was quitting college to go on the road. And my father was having a heart attack and over my dead body, would I be a musician? But, you know, I knew for some reason I had to do what I loved to do. I worked very, very hard. You know, people say, oh, if you're a musician, life a Riley. You know, unfortunately, you have to be just as smart at business, you know, because, you know, the work doesn't come to you. You have to go get the work. And for me to keep a 12-piece band going for all these years, 36 years on the road, you know, is just incredible. When I did record my album, Song of the Irish Whistle, it wound up, I received a phone call from the Boston Pops. Keith Lockhart, who is the conductor of the Boston Pops, heard the album, and he said, you know, who's the whistle player? And I said, well, that's me. And we wound up going to perform with Symphony, and, you know, we were supposed to do one show with the Boston Pops. They wanted to do the real deal Irish music, not toured Laura Laura and Danny Boy or Irish Eyes Are Smiling.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking for the real traditional Irish music, but the tunes and the melodies that have been around for hundreds of years and which we performed. And we were only supposed to do one show. We went on to do six shows in 1 year with them, and including Tanglewood. And then they invited us to record an album with them, which was nominated for a Grammy called The Celtic Album. And, you know, that has now led to over 300 nights of symphony orchestra we've played all over the country. You know, being musicians that have come from, you know, small, playing music in the parish halls, and now we're performing on the major stages of the country and in the world, and to play with the major symphony orchestras of the country, you know, a 100-piece orchestra behind me and my penny whistle, it never fails to raise the hair in the back of my neck. But, you know, for me, those are just wonderful things that we've managed to bring the music. And I've managed to keep the band going, as I said, now 36 years. Of course, COVID has really put a serious blow on us. We were on tour celebrating our 35th anniversary. We were out west in California and Arizona, and we had a 17-city tour for March. And everywhere we went, the COVID was hitting. And never in our wildest dreams did we think we'd be locked down now for a year and a half, not performing, which is just incredulous. As we all know, the world stopped, and for musicians, it was certainly a bigger blow. I had a cruise booked where I do an annual cruise every year, Joni Madden's Irish Folk and Irish Cruise, and I had 1,000 people. I had 1,000 people booked on that, and I had 2 sold out bus tours and 100 cities around the country in America, in Ireland, and Europe to perform, and boom, and overnight, the music, everything is gone, you know, and nowhere to turn. So it's, for me now, it's just wonderful to see things opening up. You know, the booking is starting again. I'm just hoping I can get the girls out. My band is over in Ireland, a lot of them, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get them in because of New York is still on, not New York, just United States is still on the no-fly zone, you know, where they're afraid to open up, I guess, new variants in. But one of the thrilling things about getting this National Heritage Award was receiving a Zoom call from Chuck Schumer. So he called to tell me, which was just amazing, to get a call from the Speaker of the House and inform me that, you know, that he was so proud as a New Yorker for me to bring this award to New York. But he's hoping that we'll be able to get the doors open. But we've played in the White House before for George Bush, and I think we'll be in the White House again this St. Patrick's Day for Joe Biden, so we're looking forward to that and getting back to touring. You know, the doors are starting to open up again, and venues are opening, and everybody's waiting. There's a grant that's called a SVOG, Shuttered Venues Grant, that the government is giving to all performing arts centers and, you know, music houses for $16 billion, $16.2 billion. So when that opens up, they're just starting, I think they're giving around 4 or 5% of it out now, you know, to save our stages and save, you know, because the music business brings in more revenue than any other business in the country. You know, you have people going mm-hmm. to dinner, and then they go to a show, and then they go out, for, you know, maybe go for a few drinks, and they're paying for the tolls, they're paying for parking, they're paying for babysitters, all the money that's involved with people going to a show. It's billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars across the country that the government is losing out in. So they know they need these venues to get up and running and get people out to get this country moving again. So that's where our next role now is to get people out. And we've already booked maybe 10 or 12 shows for our Celtic Christmas tour, which we do every year. So I'm looking forward to that. We're doing the Tarrytown Music Hall has come back to us again, so we'll see how she goes. But we're just going to get going again, Hezzy. That's what we're going to do.
You know, on a personal level, what does it feel like to be a national living treasure?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you this. I've been very fortunate down through the years. I've won so many awards, and I have Grammys, and, you know, I've played on Emmy-winning records, and, you know, I've got Peabody Awards and, you know, championships, and I was chosen for the United States Artist Grant, one of them. You're considered one of the most influential musical artists in the country. That was a $50,000 grant I got a few years ago. I didn't think I could do a bit better than that, but this one, this is the big kahuna. This is the for any folk or traditional artist. You know, you have the Kennedy Center Awards, and then this is the second one. So it doesn't get any bigger from this. This is the Olympic gold medal for a folk musician, and I'm sharing the award this year with Los Lobos, is one of the groups, and you know, people from all from the Filipinos and people from you know. Right. From African tap dancers, you know, so it's people from all walks of life. You know, I think since this award started in 1965, they've only given it to 15 Irish artists since 1965. Mm. Irish artists have only won 3% of the National Endowment Heritage Fellowships. So I'm just thrilled, you know, and thankful to the National Endowment for the Arts that they take time to signal out, you know, the people who pay, you know, who do a lot and dedicate their lives to, you know, keeping the fabric of America going and the cultural fabric, you know, especially the international music. And I guess I've been so proud as an Irish American to travel around the world and talk about America and be, you know, the representative of our country and so many other countries, you know, whether it be South America or across Europe and Canada and Australia, New Zealand, you know, I'm so proud to represent America and the strong cultural ties, you know, that I have from my own family from Ireland, who emigrated to this country. My parents came here with nothing but a big dream. They came here, they left Ireland in the 50s when things were terrible over there. They emigrated here to this country and got to work and raised their children, put them all through college, and we're all trying to do our part to add to this great country that we're so lucky to call home. So I'm just thrilled to be part of the immigrant story and thrilled to and proud as hell to add my name. You know, I'm also a recipient of the Ellis Island Medal of Freedom Award, which is one of the biggest awards to win. And so, I mean, I've been very fortunate. But this award, this is the big kahuna, as I said.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. Did you have even an inkling that you were being considered for the National Endowment for the Arts National Heritage Fellowship? When Chuck Schumer first called you?
No, I knew I was, I knew my name had been submitted, but, you know, there's...
Really?
You find out you're submitted, but, you know, that's just because you're submitted doesn't mean you're going to get it. I think they cap it at 500 extraordinary people are nominated, and then they get from 500 down to 400, and 400 down to 300, and 300 down to 200, and 200 down to 100, and they keep whittling you down. Then it finally gets to 20, and they pick 9 people out of that 20. So I'm just absolutely, I'm just absolutely over the moon, and you know, I'm thrilled and especially proud I could bring this to Yonkers and to our neighborhood and to our community, because you know, whether any show I've done or I'm learning my music, I learned it here in the neighborhood, and I've played it. We have so many Irish people that have come to, especially the Yonkers area where I live. I was the Grand Marshal for the Yonkers St. Patrick's Day Parade and marched up with Mayor Spano, and I was very good friends with Mayor Apaconi, Phil Apaconi.
Yeah.
When we played the White House on St. Patrick's Day, when Mayor Apaconi was in, I was, when they announced, you know, they just played Hail to the Chief, and they said, welcome, cherish the ladies. And, of course, we were nervous as heck playing in the White House for command performance, you know. And as I was walking up, nervous as hell, Phil Apaconi, our mayor from Yonkers, stood out into the walkway, up to, and he says, Joni, you go be yourself, and you go do the, go be yourself. And, you know, I wound up going on the stage, and he calmed me down. And he said, I'm so proud of you. Yonkers is so proud of you. And, you know, that's wonderful. You know, and we're still great friends. He comes to our Christmas show every year in Tarrytown. So I've always had great support from all our politicians and around here. And, you know, just proud that I could shine a light on Yonkers, you know. So it's for me, that's the great thing, because I, you know, I without the community, I could never be where I am, because of everybody who's bought a ticket or, you know, gave me a slap on the back or supported me down through all the years in my, you know, in the music business, coming on 40 years now for me. I'm 56 now, so I've been at it a long time. you know, so I'm just so honored again to bring it back to my parish and to our wonderful, wonderful community here of Yonkers.
Well, absolutely, and I think we're all grateful that you are part of Yonkers, and Yonkers is a family, and that's evident. One thing, when you got a call from Chuck Schumer, did he say, hi, I'm Chuck Schumer? And then he said, and he said, no, this can't be. Did you hang up on him, or do you have to call a second time? I mean, I would have said, like, who's trying to fool me? Or
well,
were you prepared because you were new in the running?
Well, what happened was I received a message from Chuck Schumer's office telling me he was going to Zoom me. So I thought he was Zooming me to book me for St. Patrick's Day. I swear to God, that's what I thought.
Okay.
Because we've been asked a few times, and I thought he was personally calling me because Congressman Joe Crowley was a very good friend of mine, and mm-hmm. I know that he had talked to Chuck about Cherish the Ladies coming to the White House, and never thinking that he just called to tell me how incredibly proud he was again, you know, that I'm one of nine in the entire country that has been chosen as for a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship. And a check for $25,000 as well, Hezzy. That's not bad either.
No, that's good. That's very good. That's just amazing. And the parish at in Woodlawn, they must be ecstatic.
Yes,
you bring it all home.
Well, our parish is St. Barnabas here, and it's right on McLean Avenue here, and it's very much. A thriving community, and we have a priest, Father Brendan Fitzgerald, who's actually from Ireland. But
I've spoken to him. He's absolutely wonderful, man.
He's fantastic, and he's been just a lightning rod for our community. And he got behind me. He got me to come to bring our Christmas show to St. Barnabas, and we sold out. We've sold out maybe six or seven nights there now, and. Just amazing for us, and he's just wonderful. But I know, you know, my phone didn't stop ringing. I had over 3,000 comments on my Facebook pages, and my band Cherish the Ladies, and phone calls and messages from everyone. You know, and it's just great. And you know, all these accolades are great, Hezzy. I would be doing this whether I got accolades or not, but it's, as I said, I'm just so proud that I could bring it home here to Yonkers. I'm the first one to win it from from Yonkers, that's for sure. So,
absolutely the first, definitely the first. So you honor us by your excellence. So when you go back to Ireland, are you going back next week? You've got family there, of course. So
yes,
they're going to be very proud of you as well. Do they know? Or are you going to surprise them?
Yes, they know. It was the onslaught of media and coverage has just been unreal. But in my case, my mother and my father were the only ones to come to America, and I come from a very large Irish family. In fact, I have 96 first cousins. 96,
oh, my God.
96 first cousins, yes. And we grew up here in New York, and we didn't have anybody. I actually wound up going back to County Clare, where my mother is from, and my father's from County Galway in the west of Ireland.
Yes.
Beautiful area on the ocean there. And I wound up not planned it, but a house fell on my lap. It was meant to be. And I bought this house in County Clare, Milltown Malby, where my mother comes from. And let me tell you how much it was meant to be. As I was cleaning out, when I was cleaning out the closet, I found an 8x10 picture of myself. Now, how many houses do you buy and find a picture of yourself in the closet? So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So myself. So I bought this house and wound up. I've added a big square, 1,800 square feet onto this, and it's just I can see the ocean from the front and my back. And I go back now and spend it a couple of months of the year. Back where my
beautiful.
Mother comes from. So it's a beautiful thing, but this will always be home for me, you know. But it's nice to go over for a couple of months and spend time with the family and get to know them more
absolutely.
Because they're not knowing them. But, you know, McLean Avenue and Kimball Avenue and, you know, the Yonkers Raceway, and I'm all in that race, and then, of course, the reservoir. That's, you know, so I'm here, and I have the coyotes in my backyard every night, and they would miss it's my whistle playing if I was be gone for too long.
I think so. And then were you written up in the Irish Times?
Oh, yeah.
Found
I mean,
out about it?
Yeah, I just did interviews for the for the County Galway newspaper, the Irish paper,
yes.
And a big onslaught is happening now. You know, the media has been, after I finish with you, I've got two more radio shows. People have been just hammering to talk to me. And just this Irish America magazine has just done a feature on me, and they're inducting me into their Hall of Fame this March. I've just found out, so it's just incredible. And again, I'm just beyond proud, and I thank you for taking the time to talk to me and let our constituents and all our fellow neighbors know about this award.
Well, thank you for making the time, and it's a celebration of you. It's a celebration of Irish heritage. It's a celebration of Irish music and history. It's wonderful. I can't thank you enough.
Safe trip. Thank you so much. Thank you for talking to me, and hello to all your listeners, and thank you again for supporting myself and Cherish the Ladies. If there's any Irish and any Irish or any of the people around town, thank you so much, and from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, and when you come back, give me a call, because you know, maybe we can help promote some of this stuff for you.
Wonderful.
So,
thank you so much.
All right, all the best.
Thanks.
Thank
bye bye now.
Have a safe trip. Bye. Oh, how exciting! Oh, you know, how many times in one's life does one get to speak to someone of such eloquence? And I've been to Cherish the Ladies to two of her concerts. Didn't have a chance to say that because she was more compelling than I, that's for sure. And she's the National Endowment of the Arts Agile Heritage Fellowship Award winner, a recipient. What an honor. And really fantastic. Well, I guess it's just about close to 11:30. We're going to be speaking to none other. Oh, he's already here. A wonderful man, none other than Brian Harrod. Good morning, Mr. Harrod. What a pleasure.
Good morning, Hesse. You've had a busy radio show this morning. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. You got to love
maybe
it.
Maybe you need to expand an hour. That's so many guests, one after another.
Well, it's been really fun. I was supposed to speak to somebody in Israel, but he couldn't make it. So last minute, thankfully, Joan Gronowski was able to pinch hit. And so we spoke a little bit about the Yonkers politics, but again, it's a different perspective. So I'm so thrilled that you're on, and to learn of your thoughts about the election. I mean, the numbers, some of them were very close, which I never expected, but the biggest story of all is the debacle that has been suffered by none other than the Yonkers City Council president. And Mike Cater really came out so poorly in the contest. I'm in shock. I thought
shock.
He would
I don't
lose.
Know. Well, first of all, congratulations to Keisha. Yeah. Congratulations to her. You know, she reached out an awful lot, but, you know, even I saw Mike Cater in some interviews referencing your paper, your investigative reporting on and sharing of some of these problems initially, which also got picked up by other media outlets, really, I think, did some serious damage to him. The story you had about the hostile workplace that started with you, and the issues with the city council, you know, all moving to refer Mr. Cater over to the inspector general, you know, started with an article about your investigative reporting. So it's good to see that investigative reporting is still alive and well and keeping people accountable in Yonkers. There's not much of it left, but it's still around.
Yeah, it definitely is, and I think more and more people are interested in knowing. And there used to be a time when they said people are not interested in politics, they're not interested in politicians, they don't trust them, and so on. Mm-hmm. But I think we do. I think we're demanding more of our politicians now. We expect them to be responsive, much more than they've ever been before. And it's not about them; it's really about the people who vote them into office that matter. And you've got to be community-minded in order to be able to do that. And so it's a game changer. I think this result here in Yonkers says a great deal.
Lakeisha, it's not over because she has another tough race right after this. This is like the halfway point, you know what I'm saying? Mr. Matten. Ron Matten is
Ron Matten.
That's between now and November. That's not going to be as easy as it might seem.
Well, I don't think it will be easy, but what I do believe in I haven't spoken that much to Lakeisha Collins Bellamy, so I can't say I know her. And I haven't spoken all that much with Ron Matten either, so I can't say I know him. But I get the impression from both that they're civil, that they will speak to issues, that they will tell us what they think, and their posture and demeanor will be revealed over time. And we haven't had that sort of discourse before. The civility, the lack of adversarial antagonism that we find today. I hope it'll wane, and I think that they will show us the light because they're of that quality. They're above that fray, you know, of getting down and dirty. That's not what it's all about to them. At least that's what I perceive.
Similar, I guess, to what happened in Greenberg. You know, Mr. Feiner's always a class act. You know, he had his opponent there, and he said, you know, even in a campaign, your opponent points out things that, you know what, I want to consider. I think my opponent might actually be right on a couple of these things, and I'm going to look into them further. So, you know, it doesn't hurt for Yonkers to get a little bit of that graciousness back, you know, and have people concede and look, we're going to, you know, the election's over and we're going to work together now.
Yeah, I like that. That's a very well expressed. What about the other contests that You know what really blew my mind? One of the biggest ones that I didn't expect to come out of the woodworks is the John Rubo in the 4th District. He's a guy that they keep talking about of late, the last 6 months. Oh, he's going to be the next mayor of the city of Yonkers. He didn't do so well. He was able to only get 55% of the vote in comparison to an unknown, Carlos Burgos, who got 45. My God, where did this guy come from? He was very compelling. I had him on radio quite a few times. And I don't know, where did all the panache from Rubo go? It seems to have waned.
It was very.
I don't know what happened.
It was a very contentious election. Not so much from Carlos saying stuff, but there were other people in the community that have been very, very vocal, and it's been a little nasty in the 4th District. So I guess it took its toll a little bit, and maybe some people have thought about a possible change. But Carlos
maybe
did
that,
better than I actually thought he would too. We both agree on that.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. And then when it goes to Lakeisha Collins Bellamy and Mike Cater, I didn't think he was going to lose by such numbers. You know what's interesting?
Oh, no.
Spano.
I was shocked too.
We come up with 16% of the vote. Woo.
Yeah.
That's huge. And is he a sports teacher?
I'm not sure what is, but this would have went on maybe for a couple more weeks. Maybe he would have actually had better numbers than Mike Cater. He seemed to be coming up a little bit towards the end, but I just don't know Fano that well. I've talked with him in messages and that kind of stuff in the past, you know, especially when he had that, when he was involved with the Rotary with that basketball court over there, you know.
Right.
And he's been a perennial runner, and I guess he's getting better and better each election. But with the way Mr. Cater's numbers were going down and the way his numbers are going up, another couple of weeks, he might have been the second place finisher.
Absolutely. Very interesting. And I only remembered the numbers from last night, but Pete Spano is at 14% today, Mike Cater at 29%, and Lakeisha Collins Bellamy at 57. That's huge for her. Does Lakeisha Collins Bellamy, she was supported by the Spano administration. Not to take away
anything of
her effort.
Initially, I believe, before the articles, you know, the investigative articles you had came out, the mayor was endorsing Mike Spano, you know what I'm saying?
Mike Cater.
The mayor was endorsing Mike Cater, but then after these articles came out about the hostile workplace and the allegations with the rent and the quid pro quo and all that, and with the inspector general getting involved, the mayor took back his endorsement and gave it to Lakeisha. The 4th estate is still viable in the city of Yonkers.
You know, it's also interesting, Lakeisha Collins Bellamy, she's also on the Working Families Party line. She won that at 93% as opposed to 7% for someone I never even heard of before, Mona Hijazin.
Same here.
I don't know how to pronounce her last name even. It wasn't much of a vote, 14 for Lakeisha, 1 for Mona. But the point is,
I guess Mona voted for herself.
Pieces aren't going to have two lines.
She'll have two lines, but I guess in this case, the one vote was Mona voting for herself. I just don't know. I just don't know much about her, honestly. Yes.
No, but that's very astute of you, because I didn't think of her voting for herself. But that's a good point.
Yes.
Okay. Well, hey, each vote counts, right?
Yes, there you go. She should have got her mother and her husband.
Yeah, that's true. What did you think about the council race for the 6th District that pitted Tim Hodges, who got 61%, and Stella Schwuchow, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, who came in with 39%. That's a blowout for Tim Hodges.
Yes, he's...
But I never heard of her before, and I only know of Tim Hodges because he was a police officer. I think he was a police chief when he retired.
Carlos, Stella is aligned with, what's his name, London Reyes. Hodges worked very hard, from my understanding. I don't live in that neighborhood, but people were saying he was going door to door each night and, taking the time to listen to people and to show he's concerned about the neighborhood. And like Lakeisha now, he has the face off on a Republican that's an incumbent Republican this time. So
Anthony Maranti.
Most of the other people won, and they're going to skate November, but Mr. Hodges has to continue his campaign, and so does Lakeisha.
Right. Lakeisha is going to be running against Ron Madden, so that's going to be a very compelling race. But I think they're both civil, so I expect them to be talking about issues. You know, it'll be a much more sophisticated contest of ideas and concepts and demeanor than anything else. So that's encouraging. I think that will show us a new way of dealing with politics and politicians. Were you surprised at all about the second district race where Corazon Piñera is the incumbent? I never heard of Annette Yarber. Do you even know her?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have much hope for the other candidates because they were really splitting the opposing vote. But I guess together they came like maybe about 40% or so. But, you had three people that she's running against. So I was pretty sure that Corazon was going to make it in. And it was a strong showing. You know, it was 60 to 40. So,
She ends up with 68%.
68? Oh, it's
almost 70-30
then.
Yeah. 32.
Yeah. So you've got newer numbers
three.
Than I've,
Well, these are the latest that came up from the county. It's not like I came up with these on my own.
Yes.
But it did seem, though, that whoever, I guess they were all sincere. Annette Yarber was sincere. Jose Roman was sincere. And Cristol Suazo, they were all sincere. But it seemed as if they were all there they actually undermined each other. If there was only one of them running against Corazon Piñera, we would have maybe had a different outcome. Corazon Piñera would likely have won anyway, but it would have been a lot closer.
I think they could have brought up more issues in the between the three of them. There weren't many very strong issues brought up to bring to Corazon like this is what I'm concerned about. It mostly was I'm running. And and some people had, there wasn't much notoriety of the three candidates. They just basically kind of, like you said, undercut each other because, if there had been one good, strong candidate who brought up issues, it might have been less of a blowout, let me put it that way.
That was it. There weren't enough issues being discussed. And whatever the issues were, they were mostly adversarial as opposed to, you didn't file for your return or you didn't do this, or you didn't do that, which is relevant in the scheme of things, but evidently not with a public demeanor, because these are people conformed to what they're demanded, but they didn't.
In Southwest Yonkers, there's a lot more important issues than the issues that were brought up, let me put it that way. There's a lot of health, safety, and societal issues that are very strong in Southwest Yonkers, but it really wasn't discussed. So I guess for another time or another campaign.
Were you surprised by how eloquent Shanae Williams, who is the city council member representing District 1, was her first term in office, and she was running against Timothy Idoni, who is the county clerk, and the difference between them was very few, about just shy of 680 vote difference between them. So Shanae Williams came in with 49%, and it was 51% for Tim Idoni. And it was almost like the young candidate Williams as opposed to the older Tim Idoni. She's black, he's white. You know, she's only got less than 4 years in office. I think she's got 3 years. She's up for re-election next year. So I guess she'll be running for re-election. But evidently, you know, the handler for Shanae Williams recognized that it potentially she had the capacity to make a win. But she was woman. She was a woman. She was black. She was young. Those are three very powerful motivators for the voter. And
now, considering
she almost made it.
Considering Mr. Idoni had 16 years, I was shocked in December when it was first announced that she was going to make this jump. With that, she's on her second term of just being a city councilwoman. And then she came very, very close. A lot of people thought, some people thought it would be close, I heard, and some people did not. But I was kind of the mind it could be close, but I was guessing that Mr. Idoni would edge it out. And but if Shanae, if Shanae had just, you know, as close as it got, if she had just maybe gotten out to some of these communities a little harder and, you know, and was around the county a little more, maybe a little more promotion, she might have just done it. I know once before, Mr. Idoni, I remember there was a guy who used to be a supervisor in Wright Town that challenged him maybe a decade ago, and it was close then, too. So I guess Shanae got very, very close this time, too, and I don't know if she conceded because there's probably – she'd almost have to win all the absentee ballots, but there must be at least, 700-800 absentee ballots in the county, you know what I'm saying, that are out there. So I don't know if it's a very, very, very close race, you know, especially for a county-wide race, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there will be a lot of challenges. Some of the numbers are very close.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see how that works out.
Mount Vernon's very close. It looks
very
right
close.
Now like the mayor's picked the people that the mayor endorsed for city council. It looks like they are going to take the seat, the controller that she endorsed. But the controller was a landslide.
The controller
city council.
Yeah.
Are close.
Well,
they're very close.
They're very, very close, but the ones that were incumbents look like, even though they're close, they're not with the winning number at the moment. So it seems this Mount Vernon Forward team of three people, they did exceptionally well, better than I had thought, and I'm surprised that
here.
In most cases the incumbents were faltering or they were behind.
Mm-hmm.
They may still win. You never know. But
I was actually
should have been blowout.
Yeah, I was thinking they would be lucky to get one seat. Looks like they're going to get three seats. So the Mount Vernon Forward team that was endorsed by the city Democratic Committee did well. Even without the endorsement of even the county executive and a lot of other politicians. Against all odds, they made it, but I guess it's a few feathers in Mayor Patterson's hat.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I spoke to her earlier today.
I missed that when I had to leave. I had to leave to do something with the wife real quick. So I met just before she came on, and when I got back, she was somewhere by. But I wanted to hear that.
She didn't want to take credit.
I'll have to listen later.
She didn't want to take credit for any of it. You know, she said, you know, that everybody else had to do the work and the heavy lifting. But one thing that's interesting is that the demeanor by those people who were part of the Mount Vernon Forward team was much more civil as opposed to contrarian and adversarial. And I think that some of the old standards of the incumbents that were there or were well-known politicians in the Mount Vernon landscape fell apart, because I think people were getting tired of their ineffectiveness. I'm pleased to see some of those city council members out the door. They haven't done anything in years.
Also, I agree with you with the as far as the campaign, you know, from side A to side B. The Mount Vernon Forward team was much, much more civil. Most of the stuff you saw on different sites or on different social media pages was other people attacking them viciously, but they didn't take the bait, and they did well. They did much better than I thought they would. Like I said, I thought maybe one of them might make it, but what did I know?
Well, nobody knows, you know, because we're not in people's minds, and particularly the voters' minds. We may hear a few concepts and ideas, but there's a limit to how much we can know. What did you think about the Jose Alvarado, London Reyes, Virginia Perez battle for county legislator seat number 17? I was surprised Jose Alvarado did as well as he did.
Yes, I think he – two things I think was wise on his part. You know, he took this election very seriously, and he started putting stuff out immediately, you know what I'm saying? And even before Virginia Perez got in the race, and, you know, a lot of kind of incumbents take stuff for granted, but Jose just got in there and started boom, 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 coming with stuff. And – Virginia, I think she made a mistake in that even while she was collecting signatures and even after she got on the ballot, for a while she wasn't saying much. Then just right at the end, you know, she kind of ramped up, you know, like a month or so before, and it looked like it was too little too late because you just can't – I think a lot of people still have this mentality of that it used to be, you know, that the election's not until – after Labor Day, and we only got to do it for a month. You know, if you're really thinking of getting a seat and representing your community, you kind of got to start preparing before you start collecting signatures, while you're collecting signatures, and after you're collecting signatures to get your message out there.
You're right on target.
People aren't voting as much, especially in local elections, based on party. You know, it used to be, I'm a Republican, he's a Republican, I'm voting. I'm a Dem, she's a Dem, I'm voting. But now it's like, you know, it's a little, people are seeming to cross over and choose who they know. You got to get known if you want to get elected.
Exactly. Well, you know what? There's very little of politics that comes into play on the local scene. I don't see much of a difference between Republicans and Democrats in a city like Yonkers, where it's always been a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll. There's a little bit of liberalism. There's a little bit of conservatism in the demeanor, the attitude, and the way Yonkersites seem to carry themselves. And they're just labels that don't always mean very much at the end of the day, because people seem to coalesce anyway, but it is based on who they like, because the policies aren't that much different. It's a question of who will conduct themselves in the manner by which they're perceived. So, you know, I think people are expecting you to deliver. No more this, you belong to this family or you belong to that family. You're the inside, you're the outside. You got to come up with the goods. I think we're starting to turn to the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to get a sense that people have to sell themselves to the public, otherwise they're not going to pay attention. And you can't be silent. And like you said, you got to start 6 months easy, early. If you're running, you better run. And you can't be quiet. You can't be tepid about your ideas. And you've got to share your concepts. Otherwise, you're wasting time.
I agree.
That was one of the problems
that
with Virginia. She was hiding out.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And yet Jose Alvarado was scared to death of her.
What would you say? She is a Dominican Tiger, and she has had a history of really being a very tough campaigner. But this time along, she was a Dominican pussycat. She just waited till a couple weeks before, and even then, it wasn't the old Virginia. Let me put it that way. If she wanted to do something, she probably needed to be out there. In February, she could be out there while she's collecting those signatures. If she needed to be out there, March, April, May, you just can't show up, in June. And now you're letting people know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, definitely. Well, very, very interesting. So, we're
the only one quieter than Virginia was London.
Yeah.
You didn't hear from London,
You didn't hear from him. Well, he wanted everybody to give him a free ride. There's no point.
Mm-hmm.
He's burnt his bridges after all these years because he was always running for office in order to get a job from City Hall. Well, City Hall never gave him a job. He kept on running, wasting everybody's time. There's no point in wasting time to, curry to a candidate that's only interested in getting a job. Go get yourself the job. The job is not to be an elected official because he never shared anything with anybody.
I think these pre-NL campaigns, not that he did exceptionally well in elections, but these elections and getting on ballots, challenging ballots, getting on ballots, challenging ballots, it really has worn people down with London Reyes. It's just been going on for, I don't know, like 7, 8, 9 years at least, So it's just, it's not even new anymore. It's just like, we've been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that. And often people who do get involved with him are not involved in the future.
Yeah. It was very, very interesting. Well, any last words from you that we haven't covered? Because I'm here. I never ask all the right questions. So I figured maybe you have some questions.
No, I sometimes I hear people lament, we don't have newspapers anymore, or the news is dead. But, this election really showed that there's more news than there ever was news in Yonkers. There's more people interested than there ever was. And, the Fourth Estate is very healthy. It's just a new platform. It's just people like to get their news online now. You know what I'm saying? And even the old, I guess legacy media. I'm looking for a nice word because sometimes I don't use the nicest words when I describe them. Of this Yonkers Rising, right? Changed their mind about Mr. Cater, and the reasons they listed were the investigative reports that you did. You know what I'm saying? So it's the new media that's kind of leading the pack now. It's the new media that's reaching people. It's the new media that actually has an audience. You have a very strong audience, Hezzy, and it's very important what you write and what gets reported.
And so do you.
Yonkers. Yes.
And so do you, and I think that people have come to recognize that reluctantly, but they recognize it. So, you never know. We may live long enough where the term reluctantly won't be aligned to the new media.
Yes.
But
we'll see.
Well, unfortunately, time has gone by very quickly, as always. Thank you for making the time. It wouldn't be the same if we couldn't, you know, try to define what's going on. And I'm sure there are other definitions as well. But we'll see where we go from here. And we've got interesting contests in the future, you know, for city council president. It's gonna be a good and interesting year. And I hope that Yonkers will benefit by it. And I think that it will.
I expect
I do too. Changes. Well, all the best.
Well, thank
to you,
Hizzy.
And how do people find out about the Yonkers Newswire?
There's a website, Yonkers on Newswire.com, and there's, you know, Facebook and Twitter pages. But I just thank you again for letting me be on the show, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
And
all the best.
I think I'm on your show again tomorrow, too, with local news, not just election news.
Absolutely. Are you kidding? We have more things to talk about.
You got
be
it.
Well.
Take care,
thanks
sir.
Thanks so much. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Goodbye. All right. Well, there we are, folks. I think they're going to shut us off in 2 seconds, if even that long. And so let me get to the studio screen and say goodbye. Bear with me a moment. Yeah, here we are. And take care, folks. We'll speak to you tomorrow. And we'll be joined again by none other than Brian Harrod from the Yonkers Newswire. Bye.